This week, a small-town Midwestern Christian girl moves to the big city, and after a couple of failed relationships, finally meets the man of her dreams. But those dreams quickly turn into nightmares when he wasn't as nice as he'd seemed in the beginning. But then a shocking development derails the entire divorce process and changed our guest's life forever. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
Failure as a husband, I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling good. Oh, the possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of My Crazy Divorce. I'm your host, Tom Milligan, coming to you from the My Crazy Divorce studio here in Panama City Beach, Florida. And of course, when I say studio, I really mean my living room with a video backdrop, but I digress. Well, this week's story is crazy. No surprise there, right? But listen up, guys. After the interview with a guest, I download the transcript and use that to edit the interview and then write my script for the show. I was totally sweating it as I was reading the transcript of Jamie's interview, even though I'd heard the story during the interview. Her story is just that crazy. Jamie told me she's going to write a book and has actually already started that process. I promise I'll be one of the first to buy that book. And after you hear today's episode, you'll look forward to it as well. I have to warn you that today's episode contains descriptions of domestic violence. And if you're watching this episode on video, there are some images that you might find disturbing. Those same images will be posted to our social media pages. You've been warned. But even with the warnings I offer every time, I've had a few people ask me why I choose to include episodes with domestic violence. Seriously, they've asked. Here's what I have to say about that. As soon as cowardly dickwads stop beating women, I'll stop including it in the show. Deal? With that said, always remember that I'm not an attorney or psychologist, so nothing on this show should be considered legal or therapeutic advice. If you need legal advice or therapy, please reach out to a qualified professional. Also, if you'd like to be on our show, just visit our website at mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button so we can schedule a recording session. And if you haven't already done so, please give us a 5-star rating on whatever app or platform you're using to hear this show right now. Now, before we get into the story, no matter how hard I tried to shorten it, this is our longest episode ever. Since there's so much information, I seriously considered breaking this into 2 separate episodes. But I'm sure you'll listen at your own pace anyway, so there's really no need. So here we go. Jamie and her younger brother were raised by 2 loving parents in a small town called Liberty, just outside Kansas City, Missouri. Her mother took her to church every week and instilled a strong faith in God in both of their children. Jamie's father was a police officer, which added even more authority in the home.
My parents were married for 27 years, so they ended up divorcing when I was 27. But up until that point, I mean, it was just a good Midwestern, easy life.
The first lesson we should all learn from today's episode is to never let down your guard on marriage. 27 years? That sucks. Years before her parents divorced, when she was about 20, Jamie decided it was time to get out of Liberty.
And I decided to kind of spread my wings, and I went to school at MU for a year, decided that college just wasn't the route I wanted to take, and I applied to be a flight attendant, and at 20 years old, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I packed up my little Honda Civic and moved myself from Liberty, Missouri to Atlanta, Georgia. So, yeah.
She didn't last long as a flight attendant, not because she wasn't any good at it, but because she didn't participate in the all but expected sexual liaisons between the pilots and flight attendants. Instead, as soon as the plane landed and the crew got to the hotel, she'd lock the door to her hotel room and wouldn't leave until it was time to go back to the airport. Let's just say it wasn't the lifestyle she had hoped for. About the time she decided to change careers, she met a guy. Their relationship bloomed and they moved in together. And that's where we'll pick up the story.
So we were together for just under 4 years. And we kind of moved all over the East Coast together. We left Atlanta, went to Delaware, where he was from, and lived in his family's home. They actually had retired to Florida and left their home vacant. So we moved up there for about 8 months. It just, Northeast was not for me. And no offense to anyone in the Northeast, but it was just not for me. It was beautiful. But the people, me being from the Midwest, people just weren't as kind. And so he actually had a business opportunity to open up in Virginia, where he was going to open up a gym. And so I followed him there. And that's actually where I got into property management and started as a leasing consultant, worked my way up to property manager within a year. And at that point is when I left the relationship with him.
I know. It's way too early to get to the divorce part. Trust me, we'll get there. But Jamie's prior relationships are important to the story, so bear with me.
We just had different ideas for what we wanted in life. And at that time, I was only 23. So I was managing my first property, making decent money, just kind of spreading my wings and becoming independent and really figuring myself out.
See, I think that's great. I mean, she's so young. She should be spreading her wings. She shouldn't be shackled in a relationship so young. My opinion.
He wasn't a very happy person. And I am and / want to be for the rest of my life. And I just couldn't with him. He was a great guy. He was loyal. He was honest, faithful, all those things.
We all deserve the loyalty, honesty, and fidelity, but we also deserve a happy partner. But after 4 years of living together, even though they weren't married, splitting up can be as complicated as a divorce. So how did this one go?
It was pretty amicable. He let me take whatever I wanted to. He was one of the most amicable people I've been with in terms of a breakup. So that was actually not horrible. I mean, he was heartbroken and it was hard to leave because we were together for so long. But I wasn't in love and I think he knew it. And we both deserved more than that.
Okay. Easy peasy. So Jamie's 23 years old, living in Williamsburg, Virginia, and managing her first property as a property manager. Over the next year and a half, she dates a few different guys, and they were all quite disappointing.
I remember calling my mom, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, this is just not working for me. And at one point, my mom's like, well, are your standards too high?
All right, quick story. When I was 21, 22 years old, a group of buddies and I went out to a dance club the evening of Valentine's Day, thinking that would be the perfect night to meet girls. It wasn't. So by 8 p.m., we're at Hardee's laughing at ourselves for being such a Mormon sausage fest on Valentine's Day when one of my best friends asks, are our standards too high? I looked at him and said, dude, if you lower your standards and then meet someone, isn't she by definition substandard? He disagreed and we all laughed and continued our self-deprecation. But he was married 6 months later. And yes, I believe he lowered his standards. So the moral of the story? Jamie's standards aren't too high. I personally believe that when it comes to relationships, it's impossible to set your standards too high. You may end up alone, but at least you didn't lower your standards. Anyway, back to Jamie.
I've never been in love, right? I didn't ever have that, like, this is the person feeling.
A couple of months later, Jamie goes out with friends for the night, and like so many stories before, it changed her life.
So it's January of 2012, and I had been at a bar the night before, and this bar had this yellow snake they were known for, which I'm deathly afraid of snakes, but I had enough liquid courage that I had it like wrapped around my neck, and I was wearing like knee-high boots and a short skirt, and it was a great picture.
It is a great picture. I've included it in all the regular places, not just because Jamie's an attractive blonde holding a snake, but because that picture is what changes the trajectory of her life. You see, Ken, a friend of one of her friends, somehow saw the pic on Facebook and sent her a friend request.
He ended up friending me and sending me a message and was like, hey, not to be a creep, really wanted to see the picture of the snake. You can delete me if you want. So that's where it started. And we chatted on Facebook for 3 months, probably on and off, until we physically met.
That first meet was on St. Patrick's Day, 2012. So they went to the parade, and an Irish pub. Perfect.
I don't know what it was about him, but it was the first time I had ever met a man where there was just an instant connection. And it was like, I knew. And it didn't take much. It was just there. I think my body knew that I was going to have children with him. And it was this weird pull. Like, I don't know how else to describe it.
Since I've never been a woman, it's really hard for me to imagine my body indicating that I'm supposed to have children with someone. But that must have been some serious connection to be feeling that so fast.
I was so attracted to him, and he was not my type at all. I mean, at all. He was an East Coast guy, you know, the Van socks halfway up his thighs and Vans and tank tops and flat-billed hats, just not my type. But for whatever reason, I was drawn to him. And yeah, it was fireworks. And we dated off and on for about 8 months.
On and off for 8 months before getting married?
So we had both just come out of relationships. Mine was a short-lived one, but it was not the best. And his was like a 2.5-year relationship. So at the time, he just wasn't emotionally ready. So we broke up, and I was devastated because I knew he was the one.
Well, that sucks. Breaking up with the one hurts. So now what?
I picked myself up and pretty much quickly met another man, and it was actually a resident of mine, and it was a whirlwind romance. On paper, he was perfect, physically my type, Christian, just such a good person. And I ended up, we met and we knew each other for 2 weeks before he deployed for 6 months. And then he was home for a month after that. And I decided to move with him to Oklahoma, back to where he was from.
Well, 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 she didn't wait too long at all. And wow, she meets this guy and he deploys 2 weeks later. Then he comes back and she moves to Oklahoma to be with him. And here I sit and can't even get a date.
So I took a transfer, a new job out in Oklahoma, Stillwater, to work in student housing. And he walked on to the Oklahoma State football team at 27 years old. So we spent 3.5 years out there. And like I said, great guy. But it wasn't my ex. And that never left me.
Oh, yeah. She's in love with Ken, period.
So when I finally came to the point where I knew that relationship wasn't going to go forward anymore, I knew I wasn't going to marry him. My ex and I reconnected, and I moved back to Virginia for him.
Well, one thing we know about Jamie is that she's more than willing to move to be with her man. But even though it had been about 3 years since they'd broken up, and even though she knew he was the one for her, there were some big red flags she probably should have paid attention to.
He was still dealing with the breakup with his ex. He wasn't completely moved on. And now, looking back, I can see it was a bunch of emotional issues that he's carried for probably his entire life. And I didn't see it for what it was at the time. Now, in those first 8 months, I never saw the monster that he ended up being in the end.
Instead of red flags, if we see them after the relationship ends, I think we should start calling them taillights, because they're behind us. So Jamie's back in Virginia. She has a great job as a property manager, and despite the taillights, Ken was great.
He was loving. He was supportive. He was just so helpful. And he doted on me. I mean, he adored me.
Sounds like the type of partner we all want.
The first couple months when I was back, it was great.
Uh-oh. Sounds like there's a big butt coming.
The verbal and emotional abuse started pretty quickly after I had moved back, after he kind of felt like I was there and I was solid with him.
Crap! Classic coercive control. First, get her to move away from her support network and family, shower her with love and attention to make sure she's comfortable with just you, and then start the control through verbal and emotional abuse. Even though it's shitty, you gotta admit, he laid the trap perfectly, and she stepped right into it. And the trap is about to dig even deeper.
We ended up getting pregnant with twins in February of 2016, And gosh, it all happened so fast. We got engaged that May.
Well, congratulations. Engaged to the one you love, even though he's really not that great, with a baby on the way. Beautiful. At least it should be. Ken and Jamie are excited to learn they're having twins. At 19 weeks, they have a gender reveal party.
So we had all of our friends and some family over to the house to reveal the girls' genders. And he ended up getting belligerently drunk with his friends. And it was the oddest moment. It was still to this day probably one of the oddest moments I ever had with him, where we had bought a bunch of food for everybody. And so everyone had left. It was the end of the night. I was cleaning up. And we had like 40 burgers. Well, like we only used like 20 of them. And I approached him and was like, "Hey, like, do you know where the other 20 burgers went?" And he looked at me with just crazy in his eyes and was like, "You know where the burgers are." And I just looked at him like, "What?" What? And it just got worse from there. And I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where the burgers, like, it's not a big deal. I'm just asking." Well, he was in my face at this point, screaming so loudly that he was spitting. So I took a step back. He took a step forward. So at that point, I was trying to put distance between us. And I didn't push him by any means, but I definitely put my hand out on his chest, like to gain that distance. And he took his arm and hand and hit me.
What? I could live to 1,000 and never understand what's going through a man's head when he decides to hit his wife.
It was with an open hand on the side of his hand, right here, just as hard as he could. And I remember being in just complete shock. One, because I'm pregnant, and two, because what the hell? And it came out of nowhere.
What the hell is right? What a dick. This was the first time he hit her. Yes, the fact that I said first time means there's more to come.
There was definitely verbal abuse before that, but never physical. And so, in the early days of the physical abuse, I would run to the bathroom, lock myself in it. I'd be hyperventilating, sometimes getting sick, having full-on panic attacks. And I'd end up like in the fetal position on the bathroom floor. And he would come and comfort me. And he wouldn't even necessarily apologize. It was just, I'm sorry you feel this way. Not, I'm sorry for what I did. But I'm sorry you feel this way. And he would want to comfort me. And it was just this sick cycle of abuse.
A sick cycle of abuse. Exactly. I hope I never understand it. Jamie's coming to grips with the fact that she's married to a cowardly piece of shit. My words, not hers. And she's 19 weeks pregnant. Not a great place for sure. 2 weeks later, she's at her doctor's office for a normal exam.
I was 21 weeks pregnant with twin girls, and I went to a regular exam where my doctor was checking my cervix and he broke my water. And 2 days later, we lost our first daughter.
That's tragic. I know couples are often devastated by a miscarriage, but when that miscarriage is caused by malpractice, that has to be exponentially worse. I literally can't imagine the emotions Jamie's feeling at this point.
I got put on hospitalized bed rest for 6 weeks. Yeah. So he was there, every night with me. And like, I wouldn't have stayed as long as I did. We were married for a total of 5.5 years. I filed at the 4.5 year mark, but I wouldn't have stayed that long if it wasn't good sometimes, right? Like, I was in love with him and we had our really good moments. But anyway, so I was hospitalized and he was there every night.
So Ken's stepping up. That's good, right? Well, one night, Ken's asleep in her hospital room, but Jamie isn't sleeping.
But even in the hospital, there were bad moments. I remember getting just this sick feeling in my stomach, and his phone, it was lighting up one night. And I saw emails between him and an ex-girlfriend.
Man, women's intuition, right?
I woke him up and calmly asked him if he could explain it.
Okay, so Ken's been caught. Now he has a couple of choices. He can fess up or he can deny, deny, deny.
He was so angry at me.
Or I guess he could just get pissed off. I didn't think of that option.
He was screaming at me. The nurses outside the door could hear it. I mean, it was horrible. Like, what makes you think you could look through my phone and da-da-da-da-da?
Of course. How could I miss the obvious? When I confronted my now ex-wife Trinity with the lingerie I had found in her suitcase, all but proving her affair, she hit me with, "You went through my things?" Deflection. Well played, Ken. Well played. But when that didn't work, Ken took the only option left. He stormed out. Like any mature adult, right? Right. So what's up with the ex-girlfriend anyway?
She was going through some mental health things, and apparently he was the only one that could understand what she was going through. So no, there was nothing physical, but he had reached out to her for marijuana. And that was his excuse, was why he reached out to her. And I'm like, well, I know that you have about 1,000 other friends that smoke, and you could have reached out to any one of them. And I ended up reaching out to her and I asked, you know, is this the only time that you've, you know, been in communication since we've been together? And whether she was telling the truth or not, I'm not sure. But she did say it was just about the marijuana and they hadn't seen each other and she didn't end up giving it to him. So that was that situation. That was the only bout of unfaithfulness, if you will, that we had.
Wow. You just lost a baby. Your wife's stuck in the hospital trying to make sure your other baby doesn't die, and you're chatting with your ex-girlfriend about getting some pot? Way to prioritize, Ken.
And so he leaves me in the hospital. I'm still trying to hold on to our other daughter, right? And anytime I was stressed, I would start contracting. So it was like not good for me. And he knew that. Anyways, this was just a week before our wedding.
Oh, that's right. This is before they're married. She still has time to back out.
And in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, like my entire family's flying out here for this wedding. Do I cancel it?
Yes, you cancel. Please cancel.
I don't want to go back on this and show everyone that they were right. Like, I shouldn't have come out here. That's whirlwind romance and made this decision. And so I pushed forward with everything.
Damn it, Jamie.
Still on bed rest, so the wedding was just real low-key in a park on the water in Virginia. And it was a beautiful day, and he was, you know, I could see how happy he was. And the thing is I know he loved me. I mean, there was never any doubt about that. And anyone around us would tell you, like, he adored me.
Look, I don't doubt Jamie, but I will never understand how one can love someone while simultaneously beating the shit out of them. Is that just me?
No one could believe when all of this came out in the end that he had been as abusive as he was, because in front of everybody, he was perfect. He was so loving. He couldn't keep his hands off me. Always affectionate, always doting on me. But behind closed doors, he could be an absolute monster. And I hid it from everybody.
I've said it many times and I'll say it again right now. Do not protect abusers. If you know that abuse is happening and you do nothing to stop it, you're a conspirator, so you're just as guilty as the abuser themselves. Again, I'm not victim blaming, but I've never understood why the victims don't leave.
It took a long time for me to finally come out and say, like, this is a problem. And probably because I think I spent half the time thinking it wasn't abuse. I don't think I realized until the end that it was abuse, because he would say things like, well, if you didn't do this, I wouldn't have done that. Well, if you wouldn't have said this, I wouldn't have touched you.
It boggles my mind that someone that is obviously very intelligent and clearly has her shit together would fall for the blatant gaslighting. But I've heard it enough on this show to know it's real, and that abusers are very good at it. I guess all I can say is, please learn the signs of gaslighting and abuse right now. Then if you're the victim of abuse, don't keep it quiet. Don't believe it's going to get better, because it won't. Get out and get help. End of rant. Sorry. So a few months go by. Ken and Jamie are settling into married life and being parents to their baby girl.
I was driving the vehicle because he was too drunk to drive. We had our baby in the back seat. And the thing is about our arguments, it was never anything a pertinence, right? It was always something little. And I don't remember what the argument was. We were driving home from a friend's house and he hit me with a closed fist in the side of the head while I was driving with our baby in the back seat.
Look, I'm not a violent person, but I would love a chance to punch this mofo. So what's his excuse this time?
And when I called him out on it, when he was sober the next day, he's like, I didn't hit you. I tapped you. I tapped you with a closed fist. He's, because, you know, if I would have hit you, I would have knocked you out.
Well, that's sound logic. Seriously. If I had hit you, you would have been knocked out. And since you weren't knocked out, you must have imagined the whole thing. That's gaslighting at its finest. This guy is textbook. But it's one thing for her not to tell anyone. But I've been in a few fights in my life. If you get hit, it's hard to hide. So how did she hide it?
He never hit me right in the face. But I would have bruises or scratches all over my body, including, you know, scratches and bruises on my neck when he would choke me. The number of times I had to go buy expensive concealer to hide the bruises on my neck or wear scarves to work, countless times. But it was always my fault. And then the thing is as the abuse progresses, and especially with a narcissist, there comes reactive abuse, which is I got tired of being the person who was crying on the bathroom floor. And I would, you know, I would snap back and I would call him a name or I would scream at him. And then he'd sit back and say, look, like, you're crazy. You see how crazy you are? You're abusive. Then you start thinking, like, am I abusive? Am I the crazy one? Am I the narcissist? Because he would call me the narcissist. And it's just, it really makes you crazy.
That just makes me sick. I mean, Jamie is actively working to literally conceal Ken's bad acts. And instead of realizing his mistake and doing something about it, he turns it all around on her. Even though we're just getting started, Ken has now taken the lead as the biggest asshole ever on this show. He's just overtaken Mike from episode 11, I Was a Naughty Girl. But they're both assholes.
I think I just totally lost touch of reality in my life, and it became normal. And that's the cycle. Like, it was, he would draw me back in. Now I know about trauma bonds, and that's exactly what it was. I was literally bonded to that man through my trauma, and he would be the only thing or person that could bring me comfort after our fight.
I used to work for a total prick named Dave. My friend Michael also worked for Dave and also really hated working for him, but unlike me, Michael was very loyal and dedicated to Dave and to the company. I asked him how and why he could be so loyal to someone he really hated, and his answer was profound. He just said, Tom, I'm addicted to Dave. I didn't get it then, but I think Jamie was addicted to Ken just as Michael was addicted to Dave. That's gross, but I believe that addiction is what allows abuse victims to keep going back for more.
The crazy thing about our marriage is that we didn't have the big issues that most people have, right? Like the cheating or the horrible money problems or anything like that. It was just the escalation of anger. He, no matter what it was, if I ever brought anything to him that upset him, it was 0 to 60. Every single conversation. There was never a, hey, can we sit down and talk about this and like talk it out, ever. It was anger.
I'm shocked that she said they didn't have the big issues in their marriage. I hope I'm not alone in thinking abuse is a pretty big issue.
You know, a good example was, you know, I was budgeting. I did all the money. I was, you know, managing the finances, and I came to him and I said, hey, like, I know I said that you could have this much money extra after we paid bills, but I was wrong. Can you sit down with me and look at the budget with me? I mean, the anxiety I had before this conversation is not even funny. Like, I was so scared to talk to him.
Yeah, I'd be scared to talk to him too.
And I just thought, let me put the ball in his court and let me give him the control of it. So maybe he won't, you know, freak out on me. And that's how I presented it. Like, hey, can you help me look at this? Can you help me figure out where we, you know, can make changes so that it doesn't feel so tight?
Well played, Jamie.
Basically looked at me and said that I controlled everything, that he was just going to give me all of his money. There was no conversation. I was controlling. He was sick of it, and he left the house.
Again with the storming out? This guy is such a weak person.
There was just no room for conversation. And I look back and I'm like, that was the big problem. Not to say I was perfect. By no means am I perfect. And I'm a type A person. And that's not always an easy person to be married to. And I get that. And I can recognize that. And I worked on it. I've been in therapy for over 2 years now, working on those things. But when you're with somebody who refuses to communicate, there's just no going anywhere. And when that person is turning to marijuana and alcohol to make him feel better about his life, it's just 1,000 times worse.
I'm sure she wasn't perfect. And I know we're only hearing her side of the story, but the pictures I've included in the show prove at least some of her story. So I'm on her side on this one.
We had our first daughter, and she was born early. She came at 29 weeks, and she had a 74-day NICU stay. So I pretty much lived in the NICU with her.
Well, of course she stayed. Who wouldn't? I mean, Ken stayed in the hospital every night for weeks when Jamie was there on bed rest.
That was another struggle of our marriage. He hated the hospital. He didn't like being there. That was a tug of war. I wanted him to be there. He didn't want to be there. So I pretty much lived there and literally checked myself into the hospital the last seven days of her stay to get her out. So she came home on her due date, which was Thanksgiving after 74 days. And so you would think that that would have been like the happiest time of our lives, right? We finally bring home our miracle baby and we're a family. And it was good for a while. Of course, we had our ups and downs and there was still abuse sprinkled in there.
So the baby's healthy and comes home. The family moves forward with, as Jamie puts it, abuse sprinkled in there. Fast forward a few months.
The day our daughter turned 9 months, I found out I was pregnant again. And this was very unplanned. I was on birth control. Like, we were trying to prevent this. And God said, well, here's another one.
This should be exciting news. But I'm sort of done being excited for these two.
I don't remember the argument because it was always over nothing. But I was probably halfway through the pregnancy when he hit me repeatedly as hard as he could with a pillow over and over and over. And it was a pillow, right? So like, he's like, it's a pillow, you know, it didn't hurt. Well, I was very pregnant and knocked me to the ground that time too. So the abuse never quit even when I was pregnant, which is so sick.
Yep. Sick.
There's another little girl and she was born on Valentine's Day of 2018.
And the abuse continues.
I don't remember what the argument was, but we were in the bedroom and he ended up running off with my phone. And he knew how bad that scared me when he would take my phone from me. It wasn't because I had anything to hide. It was because I was without communication if something happened. And so I ran after him to try to get it. And he had it under his leg. And while I was trying to lift his leg up to get my phone, he pushed me off of him and punched me in the back of the head, knocked me to the ground, and then kicked me.
Hey guys, this is Jill from OurDivorce.com. Pretty much everyone has either been through a crazy divorce or knows somebody else who has. When Tom and I designed OurDivorce.com, we knew it wouldn't work for everyone. We knew that there would still be people out there who'd rather pay their attorney to send an email to their soon-to-be ex's attorney threatening to go to court over the blunder. We didn't build OurDivorce.com for those people. We designed OurDivorce.com for divorcing couples who are willing to compromise and who, instead of spending money on an attorney, would rather just get it done while using OurDivorce's quick, easy, and intuitive process. So you have a couple of choices if you're thinking of divorce. You can choose to spend thousands of dollars hoping you win in court after years of fighting. Or you can go to OurDivorce.com, follow our three-step process at your own pace, then print, sign, and file with the courts, all for just $299. Seems like a no-brainer to me. So visit OurDivorce.com and click Get Started to access the most effective, easy-to-use, and comprehensive online divorce solution available today.
Before the break, Ken had punched Jamie in the back of the head and was kicking her on the ground. He kicked her. This scene reminds me so much of the Jennifer Lopez movie called Enough. In one scene, J-Lo's character was training to defend herself against her husband when her trainer says,
"Standing over you, he thinks he's won. And as sure as he's a coward, he will try to kick you."
And like J-Lo's fictional husband, along with literally every other spouse abuser, Ken is a coward. But stay tuned for more similarities to that movie.
So that night, after he passed out, I packed the girls up. They were 1 and 2 at the time. And I took them to my friend's house. And I called my mom. And it was the first time she knew that we argued and that we had some ups and downs. But no one knew how bad the abuse was. And so I called her and I told her everything. And I just, I said, I can't do it anymore. One of us is going to go to jail or I'm going to end up dead the way this is going. Because it was the first time he'd ever, punched me in the back of the head. That was like shocking to me.
Jamie finally tells her mom. And she's escaped, at least for now. Her dad buys a plane ticket and they schedule a U-Haul to get her home. Her nightmare's coming to an end. The night before her dad flew out, he called Jamie to offer encouragement and advice.
My dad said, he's like, I really want you to think about this. He said, if you leave him, you need to be prepared to file for divorce.
Well, of course. You don't rent a U-Haul and take your kids to another state unless you're prepared to follow through, right?
I wasn't there yet because in my head, I was like, well, he needs help. He needs to quit drinking. Like if he could get mental help and quit drinking, like we could save our family. I'm not ready to call it quits. And my dad was adamant. He's like, if you're not ready to call it quits, you need to reconsider this.
I'm shocked. How could Jamie not be there yet? And how could her dad even suggest she should reconsider?
I don't think he realized how bad it was.
I hope not. So what did she do?
I canceled the trip home. And by the next night, we, had reconciled and he told me he was never going to do it again. And he took me out to dinner for Mother's Day and it was as if it never happened.
Yeah, Ken's such a sweetheart. Happy Mother's Day.
I would always like lay in bed at night with him cuddling me, wanting to cry my eyes out, thinking like, how can I keep letting this happen? How can I keep coming back to him? I couldn't understand it. I couldn't break the cycle.
Well, this just keeps getting worse. Well, Jamie's made her choice. She's making the best of it. So a few months later, Ken and Jamie decide that it would be best to move their family back to Kansas City to be closer to Jamie's family. But they had to be strategic to keep the money flowing.
It's not going to work to where we can both quit our jobs and get new jobs and move together. That's just not realistic. Like one of us is going to have to look for a job, get out there, get health insurance. The other one's going to have to follow. So we had made the plan that I would fly the girls out to Kansas City and I would come back, pack up, and then drive my car out there. And we had agreed on this. We had a going away party. Everyone knew that we were moving. Ken was just going to be delayed, right? He was going to be behind us.
Solid plan. It should work.
Well, like 2 days before the flights were scheduled, he came to me, and again, crazy in his eyes, and was like, you're not taking my kids, Jamie. You're not leaving the state. Like, I'm going to go in the morning, I'm going to file an injunction, and I'm going to keep you here.
What? An injunction?
And I was so confused because I'm like, we had agreed on these things. And he's like, I know that you're just trying to leave me. I'm like, that's not the case at all. Like, I truly want our family to stay together. And I want to be where my family is because unfortunately his family was zero help at all. They lived 15 minutes from our house. We saw him once a year. Just weren't great people. And we needed the support. We had 2 little ones that my family adored. They constantly came out to visit us. They deserved to have these kids near them and us near them.
Exactly. And whether anyone deserved anything or not, this was the plan they'd worked out together. I think Ken's lost it.
So I called my dad and he's like, you got to get out of there. Go before he files the injunction, pack the kids up now and leave him.
Finally. I think Dad's getting it now.
So I called my best friend and she came over and it was before he passed out. And he was starting in on this. And it was the first time she ever witnessed it firsthand, where he was just going in on me like, you're not leaving. I'm not going to let you leave. All calm and collected. And it pushed me to the point of breaking. And I was screaming and crying. And he was like, do you see this? You see how crazy she is? Like, this is what I have to deal with. Like, and she could see it for what it was, because any person with a brain could see just how manipulative and abusive he was being. It was so sick.
Nice try, Ken. Your facade is cracking and people are finally seeing the real Ken.
As always, he would pass out drunk at night. He was literally on the couch right next to the front door. My best friend and I packed as much as we could into suitcases for me and the girls, loaded the car up that night with him passed out right there.
Perfect. So she's all packed and out of there. Oh, well, Ken's passed out on the couch.
The next morning, he was still passed out. I got dressed as if I was going to work, got the girls in the car as if I was taking them to daycare, got my dog in the car, and that's when he woke up. And he came out to the car, saw everything in the back, and was like, where are you going?
Wait, what? The next morning? Why didn't she leave the night before?
I don't know. I still didn't have the guts to do it. I think that whole night was like, am I really leaving? Even as I was getting out that morning, am I really doing this? Am I really getting on the interstate? Am I really driving an hour outside of Virginia? Am I really in Kentucky? Like, the whole time was, I couldn't believe I was doing it. And it took, I think, that entire night for me to like muster the strength to leave. It was one of the hardest things I'd ever done.
I really wish she'd left while Ken was passed out. But it sounds like she's finally mustered the courage to go through with it. But now Ken's asking where she's going.
And I lied and said, I'm taking them to Megan's. We're going to stay there for the weekend. We need some space. This is scaring me. You can see the girls tonight. You know, all of this. So he kind of backs up and he's got this little bit of space where he goes back into the house.
Well, he's not happy, but backs off so she can leave. But then Jamie realizes she left her cell phone in the house. She can't leave without it, or he might suspect something. So she runs back into the house, picks up her phone, and heads back to the car.
And that's when he sees my dog in the front seat. And that's when he knew that I was lying.
Oh, shit.
So it was like a scene out of a bad movie where I slammed the back door. I got in the car, locked it just in time before he was able to open it. And I sped off down the street. I drove from Virginia to Kentucky without stopping once. And he called me probably 100 times that day. And I just didn't answer until I got to the hotel that night and told him that I was leaving him.
That is so scary. I mean, that's the part that had me sweating. I mean, holy crap.
We get to Kansas City, and of course, he's been apologetic, and he misses his family, and all of the things. Well, then he starts to go, you know, he's going to get counseling, so he sees a psychiatrist. He got diagnosed with depression, gets, you know, on Wellbutrin to try to quit drinking and quit dip, all this stuff. So he's giving me all this proof that he's trying to change, right?
That's all she wanted anyway. She just wanted the loving husband she thought she'd married. But she knew the monster inside and was pretty skeptical. She got her little family set up in a townhouse, and Ken would fly out from time to time to see the kids and to try to rekindle their relationship. I really hope she keeps him at arm's length.
On one of the trips back, when I picked him up from the airport, he re-proposed to me with a ring, a real ring, because my first ring was Morganite. We were broke as a joke back then. So he went and financed this ungodly expensive ring and proposed. And I thought, wow, like maybe this is a fresh start. Maybe he can really make these changes.
Oh, no, Jamie. Don't let him buy you off with a ring.
We went to the pool that weekend. Our girls were actually at daycare, and we took advantage of the time together, went to the pool. He was drinking. I was like, hey, like, we got to go get the girls soon. We should probably not drink anymore. It's the middle of the day. And he called me a cunt on the same weekend that he reproposed.
Ken is so classy. When I first heard that part of the story during our interview, I suggested we name this episode Marry Me, You Cunt, but decided most podcast platforms wouldn't allow it. But I still think it's appropriate.
I just couldn't believe it. And I mean, I snapped. Like, that I remember, and he's, and I'll be the first one to call myself out on my crazy. I mean, it took me to a crazy place. His Apple Watch was right in front of me, and I took it and I smashed it into 1,000 pieces because I was so angry. Like, you had literally just promised me that you were healthier, that you were going to treat me better, that you reproposed and wanted a fresh start. And not even 24 hours into the trip, you call me a cunt because I asked you to stop drinking because we needed to go get our kids.
Okay. Smashing his Apple Watch seems like a strange reaction, but I wasn't there.
He went back to Virginia, apologized for everything again, begged for forgiveness, said he was going to change.
I really hope she's figured out that he's not going to change.
The idiot that I am, we bought a house together.
Oh my hell. Jamie. So Ken leaves Virginia and joins Jamie and the girls in their new home.
And in my head, this was a true fresh start. It was a fixer-upper. We renovated it, made this beautiful home for ourselves and our kids, you know, had a beautiful backyard and built this playset. It was just, it was like the dream that I'd always wanted, and it was coming true, except for the fact that he was still drinking and he was still abusive.
Yeah, she's living the dream. As long as you can ignore the drinking, emotional, and physical abuse.
I think I just thought, gosh, once we have all the things we always wanted, and if he continues therapy, you know, it'll get better, and he'll want more for himself, and he'll want more for our family.
I just don't get it.
He always blamed me. Well, I wouldn't be drinking so much if you weren't such a bitch. I wouldn't keep going back to dipping if you didn't threaten divorce. It was always my fault.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, my ex blamed me for both of her affairs. And I believed her until I realized she was gaslighting the shit out of me. I just hope Jamie comes to that realization soon.
So I put myself in therapy, and that was January of 2020 is when I started therapy. And I was going weekly at this point because I'm like, how do I fix this? Like, here are my issues, here are his issues. And I'm like, do we go to, you know, marital counseling again? Because we tried that in Virginia and it was a joke. And my therapist said, no. He said, you both have things you need to work on. He said, trying to go to marriage counseling right now is like building a house on sand. He said, you need to work on your issues. He needs to work on his issues.
Good. She's getting help. And I agree. Marriage counseling would be a complete waste of time and money at this point.
But once I explained who my husband was, my therapist said, look, like, the only way he's going to change is intense therapy, like weekly therapy for 2 years straight. Like, he has to be dedicated to this. He goes, people like this typically don't change.
Yep. Ken is still Ken. And zebras usually don't change their stripes. In one of her sessions, the therapist asked a great question.
He asked me a question early on and he said, do you respect him?
I'll ask all of you listening right now to ask yourself the same question. Do you respect your partner? Well, here's Jamie's answer.
I didn't, because he was such a monster to me, and he would do this in front of our children. The physical, he didn't. He never, not until the very end did he hit me in front of the kids. But the abusive, you know, the verbal and mental, it was always in front of the children. And at that point, I said, no, I don't respect him. And my therapist said, your marriage has a 5% survival rate at this point. Once you have admitted you've lost respect, you've got a 5% survival rate. And I was devastated, because I'm like, how do we come back from this? You know, and I knew the answer to it. We don't. It's I had to find the strength to choose better for my kids.
5%. Pretty thin. But still, she stayed. Until 9 months later, September 2019.
We had an argument at dinner and he retreated to the basement as he always did. So he left me to finish feeding the kids, clean the kitchen, do bath time, do bedtime all by myself. And he would do this often. If he was angry at me, he would, you know, exit and he'd go downstairs and he'd get drunk and he'd pass out.
Well, he's a big help.
Once, you know, the night was over and I had the girls in bed and I was alone and everything was cleaned up, I sat on the porch that night and I compiled a text message because I didn't want to have the conversation face to face. And I said, I am a single mother. If I leave you, it's not going to feel any different. I am a single mother now. I do it pretty much on my own. Anytime I ever asked for help with bath time or bedtime, he would be irritated with me. I have things to do, as if I didn't. And so I expressed my frustrations and how I was tired of doing it all by myself and that I didn't deserve the disrespect.
Yeah, Ken's a dick, and I understand she doesn't want to talk to him directly. But breaking up via text?
I go to bed, and he was famous for abusing me in the middle of the night. He'd wake me up at 2, 3 in the morning screaming. And he did that this night.
Uh-oh. He must have woken up and read the text.
Well, apparently I had forgotten to blow out a candle. So he comes busting through the door, throws an open water bottle at me in bed, screaming that I'm such an idiot because I forgot to blow this candle out, and how could I be so stupid? By this point, he's woke the girls up. They're screaming and crying. So I go to leave the bedroom to go get them, and he had beat me to it, and he had our 2-year-old in his arms, and she's reaching for me because she's terrified. He was just screaming, and he rips her away from me. And so I grabbed his arm to try to get him to turn towards me to give me the baby, and he straight punched me as hard as he could in my arm right here. And something just snapped in my head.
Those poor kids. This is just horrible. So what snapped?
It was a God thing. Looking back, it was God literally taking over my body, saying enough is enough. Like, you've got to call this. And I ran to my bedroom. I grabbed my phone and I called 911. And I probably should have called 911 100 times before that. But I didn't want to ruin his life. I didn't want to ruin our marriage. It's crazy that I put that on myself. But I realized he did this in front of our kids. I cannot allow my daughters to grow up thinking this is okay. I would rather sacrifice my own life than see them end up with a man like their father.
Finally. She's right. She can't carry the entire family. Especially when Ken is doing everything he can to weigh it down. And Mama Bear has finally realized what Ken's doing to their daughters, even if he never hurt them physically.
And that was the motivation for finally exposing it and documenting it through the legal system. And they came, the police came and listened to his side of the story. He was very argumentative and defensive and not wanting to work with the police, and it's all in the police report. And then they saw the mark on my arm. So as soon as, the female cop went out and told them that, hey, like, there's physical evidence that she's been abused, they arrested him.
After the arrest, a 1-week no contact order was put in place for Jamie's protection while things got figured out.
I was communicating with the prosecutor and I was saying, look, I don't want him to go to jail over this. I don't want this to be on his record. I want him to get help. I want him, because she's like, there's, alcohol classes, there's domestic violence classes. And I said, that's what I want. Like, I want him to get help. I don't want to destroy his life.
I'll be honest. I wouldn't mind his life being ruined about now. But Jamie's not only a much better person than I am, but don't forget that whole addiction to Ken thing. At least she knows the marriage can't go on.
If we could save our marriage, that's preferable.
What?
Maybe he'll quit drinking. Maybe he'll get better, right? So after that no contact order ended, we reconciled and he swore to me he was going to quit drinking, which he did for 3 weeks. And the end of that 3 weeks, he got drunk again. And it was a horrific night.
I cannot believe she gave him another chance. I totally believe he was full of shit, though.
He barricaded me inside of our home, would not let me leave the house. And all of this was in front of our oldest child, who was 3 at the time. Or had just turned, she was 3 at the time. And it was just sick. And some of these things I actually got on record because I knew I would need them in the future. And, she's holding onto his leg and he's like, do you see this? Do you see who she's choosing? She loves me. She loves me. Like, just crazy, weird, ominous things. And every time I'd say, Ken, please don't do this in front of them. Like, please stop. Please let me get her back to bed.
Until now, he only did shitty things in front of the kids. This is the first time he's done anything shitty with the kids.
He didn't care. I mean, his desire to destroy me as a human being was always greater than anything else, including our children. And that was the last straw for me. That was November of 2019. And then from there on out, it was me looking for an attorney, and I ended up filing for divorce on December 4th.
Well, it's about freaking time. I don't know about you, but I'm actually tired, physically tired from this story. And if you can believe it, we haven't even gotten to the crazy part yet.
So the divorce ended up being a really long process.
Oh, right. And we still have to talk about the divorce. Hang in there with me. I promise it's worth the time. So how's Jamie holding up?
I was the most broken I'd ever been as a human being. I was also the most vulnerable. My therapist called me emotionally anorexic at that point.
Totally understandable. And I'm really glad she's sticking with therapy. Ken did a lot of damage.
I met a man right after we physically separated. And I met him through work. And he had convinced me that he was in a similar situation. He was married. He was stuck. He was miserable. He'd been miserable for years. The only reason he was still married was because he had kids and assets that were going to make it impossible for him to leave. But the number of times he said, gosh, this is so crazy. We're in the same situation. We're in the same situation. So I confided in him and it naturally progressed.
Uh-oh. Sounds like a rebound if I've ever seen one. And what exactly does naturally progressed mean anyway?
I got pregnant.
Oh, shit. You know, according to Benjamin Franklin, nothing is certain but death and taxes. Well, if he saw the divorce rate in our country, he'd probably add that to the list too. But speaking of taxes, I'm old enough to remember life before you could do your taxes online. We had two options way back then: do it yourself or hire an accountant. Now, most of us didn't really need an accountant, but we weren't comfortable doing our own taxes, so we hired an accountant. What a waste. The sad thing is that until now, divorce had those exact same options. You could do your own divorce, or you could hire an attorney. Most divorcing couples don't really need an attorney, but they're not comfortable doing their own divorce, so they end up hiring attorneys. What a waste. But that's all in the past. OurDivorce.com has brought the divorce process out of the dark ages and into the light. Just go to OurDivorce.com and click on Get Started. It costs you nothing unless the process works for you, and even then, it's only $299. So you really have nothing to lose. But if you think an attorney is the best option, get up out of your Barca lounger, pause Matlock on your VCR, get that sweet flip phone out of your fanny pack, and give them a call. I suggest you check your bank balance first, though, because it's going to cost you. Either way, I hope you're enjoying the show. Before the break, Jamie had just learned that she and her rebound were going to be parents. But she's not divorced yet. Now what?
So as you can imagine, it threw a huge wrench in my divorce and terrified me because I thought, oh my gosh, when my husband finds out, like, he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me.
Yeah, I'd be terrified too. And Jamie's in a panic. So she calls the prosecutor's office and begs them to reinstate the no contact order because Ken and Jamie have a telephonic hearing coming up to set a court date for their divorce proceedings.
You can't have a final court date if you're pregnant. So we had to disclose it on the phone call, and that was terrifying. So, but at that point, they reinstated the no contact order. So at least that I felt, you know, great about, knowing that at least the law was going to keep them from hopefully doing anything crazy.
Yeah, it's just a piece of paper, but it's better than nothing, right? At this point, Ken's role in the story takes a back seat to the rest of the crazy.
But then that started a whole nother saga of issues. Because obviously once I told this man that I was pregnant, the tune changed. It, you know, started off as, gosh, we're in the same situation, and wow, like, we have such strong feelings for each other, and the natural course. And in the very beginning, and I said, if you have no plans of leaving your wife, that I am not going to be this person for you. Like, I am not going to be the other woman. I swear I would never do this. I'm a Christian woman. Like, I stepped so far outside of my morals with what I did. And I regret that to a certain point, because I can't say I regret my son. I wouldn't take him back, but I'm not proud of the decision I made as a broken human. Like, that it was not good. And I have to say, I didn't even really put a whole lot of thought into who it was affecting, because that distraction, if you will, with that man is what kept me from going back into the cycle with my husband. It was like a life raft for me. And then I think God said, well, let me make you pregnant, so there's no way you can ever go back to him. And you know, going through divorce, most women, a lot of women I know, look to unhealthy habits to like get through it, right? They drink more, they go out more. Well, I couldn't do any of those things because I was pregnant. So I had to really just focus on like becoming a better human and, you know, healing myself.
There's a lot to unpack there. So just to recap, first, baby daddy, we're going to call him Jeff, who's supposed to be miserable and getting divorced and has strong feelings for Jamie, isn't really leaving his wife. But somehow, despite the fact that Jeff lied about everything, Jamie is sort of appreciative because he helped her break her addiction to Ken and helped make sure she didn't turn to alcohol. Talk about turning lemons into lemonade.
That brings me to the whole situation with the father of my son. It's been tumultuous, and I've been the villain in their story.
Well, here we go. Think of this as part two.
Went so far as one night coming over to my house, clearly had been drinking, and offered me $2 million to abort my child. And when I said, absolutely not, he said, are you crazy? Like, anyone in their right mind would take that kind of money. It's life-changing. And I said, it's blood money. Like, there's no amount of money you could give me to kill my child.
Holy crap. $2 million? Pro-life or pro-choice, you have to admire her convictions. $2 million.
That was kind of the tone that was set at that point. He wanted nothing to do with the baby, told me he was going to sign his rights away. So right after he told his wife, he messaged me and said, I've talked to her, we've decided I'm not going to be involved. I'm going to sign my rights away.
Nice. If you won't abort, at least don't tell anyone, including the baby, that I'm the father. Jeff's a real class act, right?
Miraculously, he was saved by Jesus 2 months after he told her about the affair, and he's a newfound Christian, and all the grace and forgiveness has been given to him.
It's a miracle! Jeff is saved! How convenient.
For their sake and for my son's sake, I truly hope that their marriage is saved, because I don't want my son to be in a volatile home, or, you know, around a volatile, toxic marriage.
Good point. And that shows how big her heart is. By now, Jamie's realized that Jeff is completely full of shit and has lied to her from the beginning. So she decided to come clean to Jeff's wife.
I had a conversation with her, and I was very honest, and I, you know, showed her my heart, and we were both crying on the phone, and I apologized endlessly. And I said, you know, from here on out, whatever you need me to do to make you feel as comfortable as possible through this process, I will do. I cut all contact with him. I reported to her anytime he did contact me. I answered every question she had. Multiple times I told her how sorry I was. And that this, you know, I'm not a horrible person. I made a horrible choice, but I'm not a horrible person. You know, I made a mistake.
What more could she do, right? She made a mistake. Jeff lied. And it seems like Jeff's wife got it.
Shortly after all of this came out, that I get a phone call from my regional manager. And she's like, hey, this is going to be a really uncomfortable conversation. She said, we received a letter anonymously from someone exposing an affair that you had with a vendor. And I was like, okay, well, let's have that conversation. you know, it never, because they said it happened at work and all of these things. Basically, this person writing this message was trying to get me to pay a price, right? They wanted me to lose my job. They wanted to see me pay. And I was, you know, transparent. I said, this never happened at work. It was, our relationship was always above board when it came to, you know, our jobs. And my regional said, look, we have no issue with whoever you see in your personal life. It's none of our business. If it doesn't affect work, we don't care. And it was as simple as that.
An anonymous letter? Who would have the motive to do that?
I tried to reach out to his wife because I knew where the letter came from. Like, it was clearly her. And when I tried to message her, she had blocked me. So it was then very clear that that's, you know, it was her.
Clearly, Jeff's wife needed a villain.
I mean, I get it. He had to make me the villain so that she's not so angry with him. You know, I'm the bad guy, and it's just crazy. I understand her anger, and I never expect her to like me, and I wouldn't either. But the grace that she's given her husband was not given to me. And the thing is I, and this might sound a little cold, I didn't owe her family loyalty, right? Her husband did. And that anger, majority of it should have been directed at him.
Well said, Jamie. Jeff betrayed his wife. Jamie didn't. But his wife has forgiven her husband and then directs her vitriol squarely at Jamie. Turns out blocking her and trying to get her fired wasn't enough, though.
She has quite a few followers on TikTok, and she went public with the story. Of course, didn't name me because she knows she can't do that. But she created a very false narrative of me. You know, told her followers that I was not remorseful, that I never apologized, and then would use Christianity to shame me and say, you know, the wrath of God was coming for me. Karma would, you know, see me soon, and just all of these crazy things.
Okay, so now we enter the Christian cyberbullying phase. As they say, there's no hate like Christian love.
I had nothing to do with them because he had told me, do not give him my last name. Do not put me on the birth certificate. So I spend my entire pregnancy going through this alone. You know, he's nowhere to be seen. I did not try to contact him one time because he said, from here on out, if you need to communicate with me, contact my attorney. Noted.
She's on her own on this. No $2 million, no father on the birth certificate, and I'm guessing no financial support coming her way from Jeff. Her son is born on August 24th, 2021, and Jamie sets about adding her new baby to her already single motherhood. Can you even imagine? And if you can believe it, we're not done. Fast forward exactly 1 month.
Well, then I learned via TikTok on September 24th that his wife has now announced to the world that she's accepted she's going to be a stepmom and they're going crib shopping.
What? Is that what you call it? I guess she is the stepmom. But what happened to not wanting anything to do with the baby?
That sent me into a full-blown panic attack because here I've been with my son for a month and he's completely mine. And I've come to terms with the fact that I was going to be mom and dad. And then I learned via TikTok that he wanted to be involved.
And what a shitty way to find out. But remember, Jeff's name doesn't appear anywhere listing him as the father at his insistence. But Jeff is serious. And so a hearing date is set.
I want it, you know, to be as graceful as possible because the last thing I want is to have this tumultuous co-parenting relationship. Before our hearing, I had actually, she had blocked me, right? So I had downloaded an app to text her. And I said, I'm sorry if you feel that this is intrusive, but I really, really think that it's important for us and for my son that we all get on the same page. And there's nothing that you're going to hear through text message or over the phone that is going to get through to you. Like, can you meet me in person? Hear my heart. Let, I was begging basically for her to see who I was as a person, to see I'm not the monster that she has of me in her head, so that we could co-parent peacefully with my son, for my son.
This baby doesn't deserve parents who can't communicate like adults. I think Jamie's amazing, and I applaud her for trying to build a successful co-parenting relationship. So, how did Jeff's wife react?
And she never responded, and it was actually used against me in court. And, you know, his attorney basically said it was harassment, and why would you contact his wife? She's irrelevant. She's not a co-parent.
Well, shit.
We go to court, and by everyone's complete surprise, he was awarded 50-50 custody when my son was 2.5 months old.
No way.
And it's not to say that I don't think dads deserve 50%, because I think they do. And I want that. And I wanted that eventually, right? But at 2.5 months old, when he's still co-sleeping and he was still nursing, I just didn't think it was natural to take my child away from his mother 50% of the time. And I was hoping for a stair step to get to 50%. So anyways, they get 50% custody.
That's just wrong. Jamie was stunned. But what could she do but allow Jeff and the devil, I mean, Jeff's wife, take the baby for their 50% of the time? Because of the tumultuous nature of the baby's parents, the court ordered that all communication happen through an application as opposed to verbal communication or normal emails or texts. And while only Jeff and Jamie are allowed to use the app, Jamie's convinced that the she-devil is monitoring all communications.
I can't tell you the number of messages I've received where demanding that I apologize to her, that I show remorse, that I basically grovel at her feet at this point. And what I don't understand is I've already done that. Like, I've done it multiple times. And I mean, I was begging before the hearing to meet with her and show her who I am as a person, and not this monster that she's built in her mind. Because at the end of the day, it's not about any of us. It's about my son. And that is the only interest I have here, is that we have as healthy of a relationship as we can moving forward.
Look, this is all very new, but it doesn't look like things are going to ever be easy. Take this next incident as an example of the shittiest possible behavior.
One of the exchanges, my daughters were in the car and my oldest said hi and used his name, because I have explained, you know, the baby has a different dad and he has a whole nother family. And I'm telling them these things now, one, because my oldest daughter asks everything under the sun. She wants to know the ins and the outs of everything. But two, because I can't hide this from them, you know, and there's going to come a day where I'm going to have to explain the situation. And I haven't really figured out how I'm going to come across with that. But anyways, after she said that to him, I got a message stating how inappropriate and disrespectful it was that she knows his name and that I should never speak of him to my children, and that I had crossed a line.
She had crossed a line?
I pray all the time that it gets better, but right now I'm not really sure how it's going to, until there's a little bit of understanding there. And I don't know that we'll ever get to that point unless there is an open dialogue. Regardless of the situation and how, you know, it came to be, it's not okay. And it's not okay for the baby. And right, he's 4 months old now. He doesn't get it, but soon he's going to understand, and he's going to wonder why mom and dad aren't allowed to, you know, talk in person, and why this is so cold. And it's just not how it should be.
This, more than any story we've told so far, illustrates just how petty some people can get. Jamie's having none of it.
The way I look at it is, no one's going to silence me, right? I mean, if he's been told he can't speak to me, fine. But I'm still going to say what I need to say. Like, hey, the baby ate at this time. Or, you know, hey, can we talk about the formula he's on? It's not doing well. Can we switch it? Because these are things we should be able to talk about. And the problem is half the time on the app, when I bring up things that are, you know, of concern, he takes it the wrong way because it's in text. You know, it's like you can't understand how I'm coming through text at all. And it's always, he always thinks I'm attacking. And I go back and I read the messages and I'm like, I don't understand. So I'm like walking in eggshells, trying to come across as decent as I can when it's just basic communication.
We've all been there, right? Text something meaning one thing and being taken totally wrong. It's a bad way to communicate. At the same time Jamie's dealing with that cluster, she's still in the middle of the divorce. This poor woman. If you'll remember way back, she told us that her state didn't allow a divorce while she's pregnant. So how did that go over?
It extended our divorce for a year, basically. Once paternity was determined, you know, that was determined 2 days after he was born. Then my lovely ex, he decides to bring in a guardian to our case. And I'm like, if anyone's going to bring a guardian to our case, it should have been me, you know, the one that was abused, you know, but I truly don't believe he'll ever lay a hand on my children.
Wait, Ken brought a guardian into the mix? Well, that's just stupid.
So I go to meet with the guardian in the beginning of this, and I said, I'm confused as to why you're even in the case. Like, I don't understand. I said, but before you tell me, let me just kind of out myself. Like, I'm going to be Eminem right now and call myself out on all the bad shit I've done.
One thing she called herself out on was a disagreement over the medical care for their children. They had agreed on a specific treatment, but Ken reneged on their deal. Anyone surprised? And he tried to have their daughter treated in a manner they'd specifically agreed to not follow. And Jamie was pissed. So she headed over to their house where Ken was living to confront him.
He put cameras up all over the house. So he got me on camera, like knocking on the door like a crazy person, trying to get the girls to come to the door. And I told the guardian, I said, absolutely, I probably looked insane because I'm a mother trying to do what's best for my kids. So I said, he's got that on me. And then I said, outside of that, like, I don't truly understand why you're involved in this, because it's not like it made no sense for him to go for full custody. I mean, you're just not going to get that, especially in Missouri, unless I was some drug addict abusive mom.
And that's what she told the guardian. She pounded on his door.
But the guardian's like, I'm scratching my head here. He said, you're a professional woman. Like, you hold a good job. You're a good mom. Like, you showed up to the meeting today. That's the first, you know, good mark, because most parents don't. He's like, I really don't get it. So, I mean, we wasted over $3,000 just on a guardian that wasn't even needed in our case. He truly did nothing. You know, he looked into our case and evaluated it and was like, no, you know, neither of you are perfect people, but you're not bad people. Like, there's, you know, as far as custody goes, it's 50-50.
Well, that's good. Sounds like the guardian was as confused as Jamie as to why they were involved at all. But hey, at least the guardian cost them each $3,000. So there's that. As Jamie prepared for trial, she was overwhelmed by the never-ending motions and requests for documents.
Everything they were requesting of me, all the documentation, it was repeated. I had turned in the same thing over and over and over again. They were claiming that my Venmo transactions didn't match my bank account. I'm like, well, no, because I chose the 3-day transfer, so it doesn't match the bank account dates. Like, it was just so crazy. And for what reason? What reason? It didn't matter. Like, all of those transactions, what did you need to know that I was Venmoing $50 to get my eyelashes done, or, you know, just frivolous, needless things. I never once asked for anything other than his income so that we could determine if there was going to be child support.
Look, I know that burying the opposition in paperwork is a strategy, but I always thought that was just if you're hoping to hide something. At this point, I don't think Ken has anything to hide, so what's the deal?
After doing my research on narcissistic abusers, how they file frivolous motions. And the number of motions he filed, my attorney finally responded and said, we're asking for $500 in attorney's fees. These motions are so frivolous.
Okay, that makes sense, I guess. As the trial date approached, the judge pretty much left it up to Jamie and Ken who should live in the house until the divorce was final, or until it could be sold and the equity split.
We owned that house together, and the judge said whoever can afford the mortgage is the one that should move into it. And while I could have afforded it, it would have been really, really tight, and I didn't want to have to deal with the maintenance of the house while I was pregnant. So I said, you know what? You move into it, I'll get a townhouse.
Well, that seems smart. Money's tight for Jamie, no thanks to Ken and his frivolous motions and that guardian shit.
Well, he moves into it and never paid a mortgage. He deferred it. Yeah, he deferred the mortgage and totally screwed me on my proceeds. So had I known what I know now, I guess I could have just lived in the house for free and still walked away with half the proceeds.
He's just a slimeball. I mean, that's taking money from your own children, you dick. But he's not done.
And then on top of that, he lost his job due to absenteeism in the beginning of November. He was the one carrying our health insurance. I had elected my own health insurance when the baby was born so I could get him covered, but my daughters were under him. Well, his ego was too big to be able to tell me that he lost his job. So my children now don't have health insurance. And instead of telling me he lost his job, I learned the hard way. He stopped sending me child support. His payments to me were just to cover school costs. Like, there was no child support there, but the judge ordered him to pay me because he wasn't paying the school. And their tuition was falling behind. So I had to magically come up with money to pay their entire tuition, $1,500 a month, on less income than he was making. And I was on maternity leave. So I went 6 weeks, 60% paid, 6 weeks completely unpaid to stay home with my son, and still found a way to keep my girls in school.
Jamie's really a trooper. In fact, the fact that she's even standing and is willing to share her story to help others is quite an inspiration.
When the trial date came, I thought for sure the judge is going to, you know, make him pay back the deferments, and for sure he's going to make him pay back that back child support. None of it. None of it. I didn't get a penny back for all the weeks that he didn't pay me. I didn't get a penny of the deferments that he had ordered. Nothing. It was all split down the center. So financially, I got screwed. But yet, I guess for whatever reason, he feels like he was the one walk away getting screwed. Because he has to pay me $180 a month to cover healthcare.
Oh, cry me a river, Ken. $180 and you're bitching?
It's not even child support. It doesn't even cover barely half the cost of what my medical cost is now to cover the girls.
Ken and Jamie were officially divorced on January 6th, 2022, over 13 months since the original filing. We'll never know how long it would have taken without the pregnancy complicating things, but it's finally done. We know it took forever, but how much did it cost?
So I don't have the final bill just yet, but I think on my side of things, it'll be close to, well, with the Guardian, roughly $25,000 on my side.
And her best guess is that Ken paid at least as much, so that's $50,000 to get divorced. And for what?
For a divorce that we truly could have done this to mediation. We could have.
Exactly. In fact, except for the fact that Ken is an obvious douchebag with narcissistic traits, this is the type of divorce that should be a perfect fit for our sponsor, OurDivorce.com. Now, it's only been a month since the judge signed the decree, and just 4 or 5 months since the courts gave her baby daddy Jeff 50-50 custody of her son, so she's going through a lot. I asked how that's going.
I was a very broken human. I just was. I still am. Healing, and I'm on the right path. But now I've recognized that I just don't want anything to do with men right now. Period.
That makes sense. I'd stay away too, at least for a while. When I first meet with our guests, we get on a Zoom call for about 15 or 20 minutes just to help them understand how the recording session works and to test their audio and lighting. Just logistics. The only thing I ask them to actually think about and prepare before the actual recording session is what advice they'd like to share with you. I mean, these people have seen and been through some shit, so I think their advice is incredible. And we should all learn from their mistakes and their misery. Jamie came prepared with 3 pieces of advice.
Best advice would be, before getting married, make sure you have zero doubts. Zero doubts. None at all. Because I walked down that aisle and I had doubts in my head. And that led me to where I am today. That would be the first piece of advice. Second piece of advice is, anyone who is in an abusive marriage, is tell somebody. Ask for help. Don't stay silent. There are so many resources out there. So many women are afraid to leave because they think they can't do it. And they think they're stuck, and you're not. You can do it. The next piece of advice would be, don't use someone to get over your ex. Heal by yourself. That is one of the biggest mistakes that I made along the way. And I'm still healing, and I'm not dating right now. I made that mistake already. And now I'm focusing on myself and my kids and making sure that I can be the best version of myself for my children, first and foremost, for myself, and for a potential future partner. No one deserves the broken person that I became, and healing from trauma and abuse, it's a lot. I mean, it's a good 2-year process, and I'm a year into it. So don't use someone else to get over your ex. It doesn't work, and it only leads to more problems.
Well, there you go. 3 solid pieces of advice, but they're only as solid as our willingness to internalize them. I hope Jamie's insane story has shed some light on domestic violence and the importance of leaning on your support network before it's too late. I'm beyond grateful for Jamie's courage to survive and to share her story. When I shared my gratitude with her at the end of the interview, here's how she responded.
I had been kind of praying on how I wanted to share my side, right? And this seemed like the perfect avenue.
I'm honored that she would choose our show to share her story. I hope everyone listening will honor Jamie by sharing this episode with at least one person. What a story. I got a message from one of our listeners this week telling me that he and his wife listen to our show every week and then sit down with each other to discuss what they've learned and how they can improve their marriage. I love hearing those stories. And while I hope the show is entertaining, I'm giddy that it's also helping at least one couple improve their marriage. So like I've said literally every show, please rate and review our show so we can spread the word. If you're thinking of a divorce, visit ourdivorce.com to see if it's the right option for your situation. If you've been through a crazy divorce and you'd like to share it to help others, please go to mycrazydivorce.com and click on the apply to be a guest button so we can schedule a recording session. That story wiped me out. So that's all for today. I hope you all have a great week. Until next time.
Imagination brings a smile up to my